abi awate abi black power man. Me abi awate abi black power man. Me abi awate abi black power man. Me abi awate abi black power man. I am a real African, a real African. I am a real African, a real African. I am a real.
Welcome to the first episode of the year. I've got one of my favourite comedians in the world here, Andy Zaltzman.
Hello.
Zoltor the Merciless.
That's my formal title.
That is?
Yeah.
Is that what you have on your passport?
Not yet, but I think it should be.
Yeah.
I can see whenever I do hand my passport over to someone at, you know, passport control, they look at me as if that's who they're seeing.
Yeah.
Zoltor the Merciless.
Yeah, and with me, my music name is just my first name, so I think when they look at Awate Suleiman, they look at me and say, oh, he looks like he should be just called Awate for entertainment purposes.
I can see that, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'd imagine as you, if you work in passport control, clearly, you know, up to 100% of the time, nothing exciting happens.
Yeah.
So you must have these little mental exercises. You know, what is this person's name as a, you know, were they to be a, you know,
a famous musician or comedian.
Or comedian or an American football player who have famously ludicrous names.
Pujols.
Yeah. I mean, the king of, I mean, American sport never fails to give when it comes to idiotic names. Albert Pujols.
Yeah.
Leading the way.
It's brilliant. I think it's supposed to be pronounced a different way.
Yeah, but the great thing about America as a nation is that, you know, clearly they know, you know, there's obviously a massive Hispanic community in America. Clearly everyone knows that it probably should be pronounced Pujols.
Yeah.
But baseball commentators as a species have taken the executive decision that he should be called Pujols.
Yeah.
And I admire them for that.
No, I completely respect it. I think, yeah, it's needed. Does John refer to himself as the harbinger of everlasting vengeance often?
Not often, I think. No, but I think, you know, he has the tattoo on his back, but yeah, other than that.
Yeah. Did you administer that? Did you?
Oh, no, I believe he did
the penman?
He did that himself in jail. Very hard to tattoo yourself on your back.
Yeah, that seems.
Yeah, you need a couple.
If he somehow managed to get the tattoo gun or pen stationary on the wall and moved his back.
Yeah.
That
be
seems
quite difficult.
Yeah, but to get in your hand around there, that seems even more difficult, to be honest.
Some kind of device involving various pulleys and levers.
Mm. Is John a genius?
It's possible. I don't think that
is club he the
is
new,
in his bag.
Is he not the new Nikola Tesla?
No. I mean, he's got a lot of qualities and talents, but I don't think being the new Tesla is amongst them.
Well, there hasn't been.
Well, no.
Yeah,
he's. But even Tesla wasn't the new Tesla.
Yeah,
he was just Tesla, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. You're right.
And he had to be himself again. Could he have lived up to it?
I often think if Tesla was to come back, this is because I daydream a lot. Do you do this? Do you walk around thinking, oh, if I had this superpower, if I had, you know, oh, if we got invaded by aliens right now, I would save. Do you ever have those daydreams?
I'm mostly about sport. But my son is 4 and he's really into superheroes. So I have started to, you know, to think not so much what would I do, but what would my son do?
Yeah.
He's much more likely to become a superhero.
Well, you could
than I am. I think I'm too old to get recruited because, I mean, if you're headhunting a superhero, you're not going to get a guy who's 38. You want to get somebody
young.
But if
you've got the skills for the job, surely you can't be overqualified.
Yeah, but there just aren't that many. I think most superheroes, kind of mid to late 20s, early 30s, maybe. I think 38. With all the training, it's like being a sushi chef, isn't it? It takes years to get up there.
What's his name? Mr. Manhattan.
Right.
And he was a physicist, and he was, you know, quite, you know, old. He wasn't old, you know.
Yeah.
He was about middle age when he, you know, got...
Well, there's hope. Maybe. I'll consider it.
Well, what superheroes have you... what superpower would you take if you were offered a chance to have one?
I'd just like to be a bit more efficient.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I waste a lot of time. I'd like,
So knowing your family history of the Germans, you'd want a German superpower.
Well, yeah, I might build some bridges.
Yeah. All right, fair enough.
God, it's a long time ago now.
I would have teleportation.
Yeah, that's probably more useful, actually.
Yeah, it's the best one.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the best
one. Where would you teleport yourself to?
Anywhere. I don't have to wake up early for stuff. I just have to go there.
So, I mean, that's a practical thing. I mean, that is related to efficiency, isn't it? That's avoiding transport.
It's related to lackadaisicalness.
Yeah.
The fact that I'm always late to stuff.
Yeah. And but you're just, not really applying your superpower to the benefit of all humanity, then?
No, I would. I would. Like, quite often I've been like, okay, where is David Cameron right now?
Right.
Just so if I had superpower, if I got it at that second, I know where he is. Like, he's in the House of Parliament, teleporting there, and then teleporting back to a terrorist cell.
Right. Of where he belongs.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So my first question is, second generation Jew.
Yeah.
Have you found that being a Jew in the entertainment industry, have you found that it's true what they say?
That we've got the whole thing sewn up?
Yeah.
Well, have you found it looking personally? At my unceasing run of TV hits, I don't think that is true.
Okay.
When I've been booked on Mock the Week once, I might start to think there's a Jewish conspiracy.
Okay.
But thus far, I don't think so. Maybe I'm just not Jewish enough.
Yeah.
Maybe the Jewish conspiracy has looked at me and said that is not the kind of Jew we want running international showbiz.
Yeah. Did you not go to the Jewish free school?
I did not, no.
Oh, that's where you went wrong. That's where you went wrong.
That's where all the powerful plans are made, is it?
It's that school, and it's the same school that like Stuart Lee and Simon Mayo and and Richard the Hamster Hammond went to.
Right.
And the Brit school.
Right.
Are you aware of the Brit school?
No, I'm not aware of the...
It's a school in Selhurst.
Right.
Which is basically run by the Brits, and everyone that ever wins Best Newcomer always comes out there. The board of governors are all music industry people and awards people.
So it's the Eton of pop music.
It's the most corrupt place ever, right? And to be honest, I'm more talented musically than all of them.
And I don't doubt that for a second.
When one of my friends got nominated for Best Newcomer last year, I won't say his name because he just said some disparaging things about them, but you can guess who it is. If you look at the nominees last year, there's one guy who didn't go to a Brit school.
Right.
And I was like, you're not going to win, right? And he was like, I hate those Brit school pricks. I've got some questions I have prepared.
Yeah.
I think one of them is you went touring with Stuart Lee in, was it year 2000 or around those times?
Yeah, when I was pretty new.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a pretty short tour.
Yeah, he said it led to him retiring for several years.
Yeah.
Is that anything to do with you? Because he said that you turn up to places and they wouldn't know that you were opening up.
Yeah, that was a logistical issue involving an incompetent booking agent.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, I did turn up and they were a bit surprised that I was there as his support act.
Yeah.
Maybe it was just my comedy that made him give up. I think there was no point in carrying on with an art form that was clearly dead. I don't know.
Or the other way.
Or the other way. There was no way he could match
because the best people make you feel that you can't do anything. Like my favourite musicians, when I listen to their stuff, I can't do it for a few weeks.
I don't think that's what Stuart Lee felt with me, particularly not when I was barely off the open mic circuit. I didn't even think that.
Okay.
Even my wife didn't think that of me at that time.
Was she a wife at that time?
No, she was my girlfriend.
Okay.
So she'd yet to make the full transition to a wife.
How comfortable was she with you touring? Because when I had a girlfriend and I was touring,
it was like,
oh, are you going to be seeing all these girls? Are you going to be... Is it in the comedy game, do you get...
I'm not sure I've ever been approached by what you might term a groupie.
Yeah.
But I don't have a face that particularly attracts groupies.
It doesn't matter.
Or, I don't give off the right groupie attracting vibes.
I don't give off that vibe at all either. But, they still somehow worm their way into the dressing room.
Well, they certainly don't worm their way into my dressing room, or indeed into my dressing room by any other means of transport than worming. But that's all right. I have a high quality wife that I'm currently, as a first wife, she's excellent. Yeah. Really terrific.
And you've previously said you are batting above.
Yeah, definitely batting above average. Yeah, she's out of my league, frankly. And then the moment she realises that, she's going to be off like a shot.
Do you often think about, trying to conceal that from her?
Well, I've done my best over 16 years, so clearly something's working.
You delivered a child.
I delivered a child out of that wife, yeah.
Yeah, you personally...
Yeah.
I've heard you tell the story, but one to one here, man to man.
Yeah.
How terrified were you?
I was absolutely, totally terrified. I could barely breathe.
Yeah.
I was so frightened of what was going to happen. And bearing, you know, we knew an ambulance was on the way.
Yeah.
Even so, you know, I've spent my entire life avoiding any form of difficult decision, responsibility, or awkward social situation. That's just part of being British.
Yeah, of course.
So when I had to deliver my own child out of my own wife in my own house, that was, I was out of my comfort zone.
Yeah.
So it was, yeah.
And was it just you and her in the house at that time?
Well, no, we already had a daughter who was downstairs with my sister who'd come to.
Okay. Why didn't your sister help out?
Well, my sister was keeping my daughter out of the way.
Wouldn't you pick the other one?
What?
Why wouldn't you take your sister's responsibility, just looking after the kid, and your sister could have been delivering the child?
I think she might have been even less well-prepared than me for that.
All right.
My sister has many qualities, but I don't believe midwifery is amongst them. But then I didn't believe it was amongst my qualities.
Yeah, but...
And currently my midwife career is one out of one.
Yeah.
100% success.
So why do we bother sending them to university for free?
Why
do we bother having an NHS? If people could deliver their own children.
Exactly. It's not a skill you can learn. You've either got it or you haven't.
They're doing the right thing then.
Yeah.
George Osborne is doing the right thing.
Yeah, cut everything. I mean, doctors, I mean, they're coming with all these fancy words, but really you can either heal someone or you can't.
Exactly. You're born with
this fancy equipment.
Yeah.
That's just window dressing, isn't it?
It is. And
you cannot learn to be a doctor.
The only thing that, I've recently had surgery on my knee. Yeah. And
Did you do it yourself or not?
I think I could have.
Yeah.
My mum's a nurse. She could have taught me through it.
Yeah. You've got the internet as well.
I've got for everything.
Yeah.
You know, how to fix anything. You just go on YouTube. But But I was like, I don't take any drugs. I don't drink. So when I was under all of those drugs, all of them were inside of me.
Yeah.
And I woke up after it. I was just so in love with everyone. I was just saying to them, "You are heroes. You are a hero. You know, you deserve anything you want as a worker or whatever. You know, you deserve everything." But I do find myself whenever in A&E, because I do find myself a lot, thinking, please give me the Indian one, please give me the ethnic one, because I know that they've worked harder to get where they are in this country. They've probably done their qualifications back home, and when came here, were told, "Nah, piss off, mate, you've got to do them again here," like my mum had to.
Right.
They're just better.
Yeah.
Do you not, or do you want the white one?
I've...
Who's always in charge.
I have no preference, but I've been lucky, and I've never really been to hospital for anything major on a couple of broken bones. So, when you look at it's a very interesting thing from the point of view of Britain's attitude towards immigration that, you look at all the doctors that we've managed to steal from overseas.
Yeah.
I do think most illegal immigrants only come here to see their local GP. So
it's very true.
I'm not a racist, but were I a racist, I would probably lay that aside at the moment of medical treatment
in
favour of someone who knew what they were doing.
Yeah, and trust me, the Indian one knows what he's doing better than any other of those doctors.
Now, that's racist against doctors who aren't Indian.
So be it. I'm black, I can say what I want.
Yeah, sorry, I forgot.
No, it's brilliant because I've done a show on Tuesday. For people who are listening to this who don't understand what's going on in my life right now, I've just released a music video. So, and while that is not getting as many hits as possible, I've decided to finally go into comedy, which I've threatened it quite often. I have threatened my audience with John, if you don't like me here, I'll go to America. And with me, if you don't like my music, I'm going to do some comedy. I was doing a gig on Monday and on Tuesday, and I just realised that I could say whatever I wanted.
Yeah.
And I called the audience a bunch of blue-eyed devils, and they loved it. It was brilliant. Yeah. I mean,
that won't necessarily always work with every audience.
I think your notes would help me avoid the shows that would beat me to death for that kind of thing. But I think they understood that it was ironic. I do actually feel that way about the power system.
Right. It's run by blue-eyed devils.
Not necessarily. Some of them are brown-eyed.
Right.
Which Malcolm X said. But, when people don't understand sarcasm, which I didn't for a while, when I first saw you, actually, it was in Edinburgh, 2011, with Fear of Brown Planet.
Yeah.
And, I didn't understand it for a while.
Right.
And for the record, we know your whole Edinburgh set from Political Animal,
right.
And we
you saw it quite a few times.
We saw it about 8 times, yeah. And you know, we know every word of it. But for the first time, you weren't overtly saying that this is satirical,
right?
And the joke that kind of sent me over was for those who don't know much about the Middle East, I'm a Jew.
Yeah,
I can tell you a lot about it because you don't know much about it, and I do. About the Middle East issue. God promised it to us 5,000 years ago. Case closed.
Yeah. It's all there in black and white. Yeah. Admittedly, we wrote that.
I didn't get the irony in that.
Right. And well, there is no irony. It's just a cast iron historical
fact. It is. But I didn't... You know, I said to Armour, is this guy flipping serious? You've taken me to see a Zionist. This is not going to go down well. And I was thinking, all right, when he comes off stage... But then I realised, I was like, this is what they do in this country. They tell you, because it's the opposite of what they say.
That's quite hard to find, from a parenting point of view, that I have two small children, to explain the difference between a lie and a joke.
Yeah.
That's quite difficult. Mm. I mean, and sometimes also with a comedy audience, it can be difficult.
Yeah, it is. I think... The best, I think, I can't advise you about how to deal with your kids, but I think my favourite joke when I was a child was the fantastic pun, why is 6 afraid of 7? Because 7, 8, 9.
Oh, yeah.
And it was my first foray into the world of pun.
Right.
And I couldn't stop just, like, laughing at it, but also just, it means two things, and they've used it in a humorous way to mean two things. This is amazing. And it just blew my mind.
Yeah.
And I was trying to go through other words that were puns and how I could use them. And, you know, I didn't know that it was seen as, like, the worst type of humour.
That's, you know, very much an outdated view.
Yeah. Do you think puns are still relevant?
Andy Goldsman? Very much the high. It's not just the. Not only would I disagree with it being the lowest form of humour, I would say it's probably the highest form of art.
Mm.
I mean, that's not a widely held view. But I believe if Michelangelo had been alive today,
Mickey Paintbrush
himself, he would not have painted the Sistine Chapel.
He would have just.
He would have written jokes for Tim Vine, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
would he have written the pen behind the ear bit? Because rumour has it that you came up with that whole bit backstage at a gig once, and you were actually just trying to put a pen behind your ear, and that's... everyone in the dressing room was just chanting pen behind the ear, pen behind the ear,
right.
and Tim Vine saw it and just ripped it off.
That's not true.
That's not true.
No, that's something you have just made up.
It is.
But no smoke without fire, so maybe...
He hasn't denied it.
No, he has not denied it. There's been an eerie silence in the 10 seconds since that was first suggested. My daughter's sort of aware of puns now.
Because of you?
Partly because of me. And, you know, the kind of kids' books have quite a few kind of word plays in. And so, yeah, she's... Well, maybe it's a sort of an entry-level form of comedy, isn't it? It's a gateway comedy.
Yeah, but when...
Leading on to the harder stuff.
But when you do it, it does have like a... It is quite intellectually challenging. It's not just like a pun that, you know, is accessible to everyone.
Right.
It is... How hard is it to write a pun run?
Well, so I do it, I don't know, every few months on the Bugle. I think when you have the idea for it, it's usually just from one thing, and you think, well, hang on, I could make more puns out of this. I did all the American presidents in succession in chronological order.
Backwards. Oh, forwards or backwards?
Forwards, well, forwards from backwards. Post-war and then backwards.
From pre-war?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you went into the English kings and then...
Oh, yeah, that's right.
you didn't want to stop, did you?
Yeah,
I mean...
No, I did you have to make a limit take sometimes. That a little bit too far, so...
And then then the Roman emperors as well, which is...
Oh, yeah, which is that was sort of any highlights. I wouldn't go the whole way back.
Yeah.
But then I mean, that's obviously the kind of thing that if you did that actually at a gig, you would probably be forcibly retired by the audience
or burned,
and promoters possibly burned. I think that might be what happened with Joan of Arc.
Mm.
I think she might have just unfurled about 60 puns in a row, and they thought, we're going to get rid of this. Yeah. We're going to deal with, snuff this out.
But of course, with her, she wasn't of the red hair specimen of human being. So,
but apparently, her final words were, "I'm on fire." So, kaboom!
Wow.
Is this on?
All right. I did my ear in playing football in a match which included a lot of music industry people,
right?
Ahead of like XL Records and other people, you know. And it was my first game with them, and it was the best game of football I ever played in my life.
Right.
I usually play every Sunday. I haven't played since that injury, but I usually play all right. But this game, I was taking the mick out of this record executive's son. So he decided, in the middle of me doing a Cruyff turn and doing a 1-2, I'd done a Cruyff turn, I took him out of the game and then did a 1-2 with someone. He decided to two-footed tackle me, and I've been out of the game for a while.
But, well, that's the music industry for you, isn't it?
It is. It's cutthroat.
Hard business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I know that you play football often. Yeah. Is it the comedian? Is it? Does that still happen?
Comedians football every Tuesday down in Crystal Palace. Yeah, okay. And it's extremely high quality.
Is it?
Yeah. I'm probably the finest two-footed passing midfielder this country's produced since Glenn Hoddle, I would say, on the evidence
Well, I think you're forgetting the greatest player of all time, Paul Scholes, who was the greatest passing midfielder there's ever been.
No, it's not a patch on what I can do on a football pitch. You come and see me on a Tuesday afternoon playing with a bunch of unfit comedians.
Who still gets involved? This interview has just been an elaborate ploy for me to try and get in as soon as my knee heals.
You're welcome to come.
But what level of fame do I have to be at?
Oh, no, there's no qualification for level of fame. The qualifications are that you can't be too good at football and ideally you don't take it too seriously.
Okay, so, yeah, that's fine.
So... I don't know if you'd qualify on those grounds or not. You're talking enough about the Cruyff turn there.
I'm talking about the Cruyff turn, but to be honest...
Which Cruyff are you talking about there? Dad or son?
Johnny Cruyff.
Right.
Or, no, his son was Jordy Cruyff, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He played for us for a while.
Good player, but not as good as his dad.
No, you can't be.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kasper Schmeichel's finding it hard, I think.
Well, yeah.
Do you have a team?
Jesus' son probably found it hard, so I...
What was his name?
To
do we know?
Him out of all
do
the,
we know what his name was?
Oh, Stan Brown. He knows about these things, doesn't he?
I think he is well versed in the.
Yeah, I'm a bit out of the loop.
Yeah, but what team do you support? Do you support a football team?
I support Gillingham.
Yeah, but they're doing well. They were top of the league.
Yeah,
league,
they're second now. League. A couple of games in hand, but I don't go. I used to go and watch them quite a bit when they were, when I lived in Kent, and they were really awful.
Yeah,
and every goal was a. Felt like a landmark accident. In human history and an accident.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't really... My wife's not really into football. We watch quite a lot of rugby.
You also love cricket.
I love most sports, but cricket in particular, yeah.
Can you explain, as a working class black man who's grown up in Camden, I don't understand it. I know the rules, I think.
Yeah.
I know the basic rules. I don't understand why people watch it.
Right.
But I do know who watches it. It's mainly middle class people and Indians.
Yes.
And people from Bangladesh and Pakistan.
Yeah, yeah.
They naturally have to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know. But can you...
Cricket's probably the greatest invention in the history of humanity.
Mm.
I'd say outstrips speech.
Fire?
Fire, the motor car, snooker, all the big ones. I'll say cricket is better than any of them.
Yeah.
I think what you need to do is set aside a year of your life to get into it.
Yeah.
And by the end of that, you should understand it. Okay. It's a game that reveals the many layers of the human soul.
Okay. I think...
In some ways.
I think the reason why I don't like it is because I don't like, being a working class person, I do have a proper dislike... Of people with more than me,
right,
and their lack of caring.
Yeah.
To be honest, a lot of people who are who have been revolutionaries in the past have come from middle class backgrounds, like Che Guevara and others, which is which I find quite strange. They decided to come to this, even people like Marx and stuff. They weren't necessarily workers, but they decided there's a problem here. But I don't like. Anything about the culture generally and cricket is kind of the middle class, maybe.
Right.
Other than certain, you know, things, which like satire, working class comedies, you know, is quite, oh, let me tell you about, you know, bill down the pub, you know. But, you know, I understand some things in the fine arts and that kind of crap, but cricket, I just don't. Football is a language of the world, I think.
Yeah.
You know, you go to any country in the world, put a football down, and they understand you, you know.
Yeah, but cricket's not a middle class game in all the countries it's played.
Yeah, I mean, in other countries.
It's the game of the people.
Of course it is, yeah.
You know, well, it used to be in the West Indies, I think less so now, but certainly in the Asian countries. Yeah. So it's. And in Britain, you know, it's probably become more that way than it used to be.
I mean,
But
I think it's maybe because of the equipment you need.
You need equipment and you need time. Yeah. And I guess so that does slightly work in favour of people with more money and more time.
Yeah, whereas football, you don't even need a ball. You can have a plastic bag, rubber band, whatever you need, and you've got a game.
You don't even need that sometimes, the way...
Oh, I imagine.
The way Gillingham used to play, when I used to go and watch them. The ball was entirely incidental.
Yeah.
So. Oh, it's a great game. I'd advise doing that. Take a year out and from whatever you're doing.
I watched the IPL for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not really that much of a fan of it.
No.
I
don't
mind. You like traditional cricket.
I like the long stuff. I like stuff that enables me to set 5 days aside from reality.
Sit at home.
Sit at home or at the ground. And
does your wife go to work every morning?
Not currently. She was a lawyer.
Okay.
Yeah, she's studying.
But for a while she did. Yeah. And you were at home watching cricket and writing. Did you just say, "Oh, I'm writing. This is my job."
Yeah.
But you weren't. You.
Well, no, it's all going in. It's all research, isn't it?
For comedy.
Well, for comedy, you know,
and for cricket. Writing.
Like I said, it reveals the many layers of the human soul. As a comedian,
yeah,
you have to understand that. And you know, watching Michael Atherton grind out a slow 50, that's probably more valuable than reading, you know, the works of Wittgenstein, in terms of understanding how humanity works. But then I started writing about cricket 4 years ago or so. So now it is actually, I can say I am actually working.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
I mean, it's hard work. I mean, it's probably harder than mining, I would think.
I think it is.
Yeah.
Writing
about cricket.
Yeah, because you're using your imagination.
There's not a tougher job in the world, I don't think.
I think words, just like words, because you're using your imagination.
Yeah.
Menial, easy things like mining. You're told what to do. No one can tell you how to write. But mining, you can just pick up the axe, the pickaxe.
Bang away into that. Yeah. What's that? That looks shiny.
Done.
Have a dig at that.
Yeah.
Bingo.
So what team would you recommend me following to try and understand the art of
cricket?
Yeah. One minute, does it work on a club level, or is it mainly national?
Well, I find international cricket's a bit more interesting. I mean, the thing is, growing up in the 80s, England, not only did they lose a lot, but they also had the dullest team, generally.
Which is like English football now.
Yeah, basically, yeah. So all the teams that would come over here in the summer are always much more exciting, apart from the New Zealanders. And
Are they boring? Is that an in-joke?
Oh, no. Well, they were a very dull cricket team.
Yeah.
Sure, they're delightful people.
Yeah.
So you kind of learn to love the opposition. That's a great thing about cricket. There's a lot of, you know, you applaud the opposition, whereas in football, you could have, you know, a guy get the ball underneath his own crossbar, dribble past the entire opposition team twice, and chip the keeper from 35 yards.
I'm going to call you on
and
that
one. And there'd be one person in the crowd.
I'm going to call you on that one.
And the rest shouting at the linesman.
When Fat Ronaldo, who wasn't that fat
at the
time.
Yeah, this is one example.
Right? Yeah, do you know this? When he came to Old Trafford, he scored a hat-trick and we gave him a standing ovation. Yeah. So
I'm sure people were clapping something else. I'm sure that was a mistake.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
I'm sure like, the linesman had just sneezed on his shirt.
Or Alex Ferguson accidentally said that we were going to buy a midfielder.
Yeah.
Which we've needed for years. Yeah. All right, cool. So I'm going to pick a country and start following cricket then. Because I picked the Bangalore Super Kings or something? The Super Kings. So whoever the Super Kings, the Chennai Super
Chennai
Kings.
Chennai Super Kings.
That was my team.
They did well, yeah.
The flat, we all picked a team.
Right.
And, you know, and we decided to actually follow it for a while. Yeah. And it was all right.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, that's because it only lasted about a week.
Yeah. You do need a bit of emotional involvement, I think. So,
yeah.
Whether that's real or pretend, but yeah.
Fair enough. All right, cool.
And England are quite good now, so you know, you can support.
I can't do it.
No.
I can't, morally, I can't. Like, my heart would sink.
Right.
For me, it's weird, okay, because I'm. All right, I grew up here. I came here when I was 2. I was born in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia.
Right.
But I'm from Eritrea.
Right.
And if I had to play football for a team, those three countries I'm eligible to play for, which is Saudi Arabia, Eritrea, and England.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have ever played. I'd just be a club player. I would literally have had to have said to all three countries, no, piss off, I'm not playing for any of you because all of you are flipping evil. It's like, I'm not playing for my colonisers. I'm not playing for, you know, even if I was eligible to play for Italy because they colonised us for a while, just piss off. You know, look what you've done. Do you know what I mean? And in Saudi Arabia, you're not good people, though, are you? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, at an individual level, maybe, yeah, but I'm talking about, you know, stop killing people and torturing people and stuff.
Yeah,
and then for Eritrea, it's like we've got a dictator, and it's like, even that's my blood country, and I can't even represent them because that new flag, I just can't. It's, you know, it hurts because I'll never, you know, I think that's why I'm happy that I never made it as a professional footballer. Because
that's taken that awkward decision out of the game, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who would you have played for? Would you play for England?
Yeah.
Is it Liechtenstein?
No, I could have played. My grandfather was from Lithuania.
That's it.
But he was a Lithuanian Jew, and Lithuania was not a
good place.
Not a happy place to be a Jew. So he ran away from there and moved to South Africa.
Yeah. Was that a better place to be?
It was
a
better place to be a Jew.
Okay.
Because they had stronger prejudices against other people. So the Jews were higher up the abuse chain, I guess. So, and then my father moved to England. So, I could play for
South Africa
or Lithuania or England, but
or Israel.
I could probably technically
you could get a passport like that if you wanted to be honest.
Yeah, I don't know, not after some of the things I've said on stage. So I don't know. I decided that was too difficult a decision to make. I didn't want to let anyone down, so I just stayed crap at sport.
I didn't decide to stay crap at sport.
Yeah.
I think it has to be said. I persevered at basketball and everything, really, but just wasn't good enough.
No. Darts, I think you take up darts. If you did nothing but throw a dart for 10 years, you'd be quite good. Like an international
player. I played for the first time last Monday. We did a pub quiz in a pub right in Camden, and they had a dance board, and I decided to try it. And it was the first thing in my life that I tried for the first time and never mastered.
Right.
When I first did, archery with my school, they were like, wow, you know.
Right.
Air rifle type stuff. I hit the bullseye every single time.
Yeah.
And they were just, you have to be part of a club. You have to be.
Yeah.
This can't just be natural. And I was like, I wasn't, you know. But darts, you know, I didn't do well at it.
Right. That's a shame.
Yeah. Pool, I've, you know, many a year spent in the youth club playing pool.
Yeah.
I reckon if pool was as lucrative as snooker, I would have got into it.
Yeah, well, that's a big if.
Mm.
But an archery, that's a valuable life skill to have.
Yeah, I think it's because my dad's tribe are the warrior tribe.
Right.
They sent them out first every time, so I was always, for some reason, I just picked it up really easily.
Because, you might, if you ever need to hunt a stag, you want to be able to shoot a bow, don't you?
Yeah, you do.
Well, that's the...
And that's when the revolution happens and they take away all the guns, you can fashion a bow and arrow.
I've got
a
bow and
arrow. A lot of things,
A little bit of kitchen foil and a cardboard tube. There, bingo. You could take
what would
down
the kitchen foil be useful?
Not sure. I didn't think that through.
Yeah.
But I'm sure you could twist it into some kind of, I don't know, the elastic properties of tin foil. I'm guessing they're not great.
No, I wouldn't think they're.
But so much of physics is psychological. And if you want it enough, that's what they always say, isn't it? If you want something enough, you can make it happen.
Yeah.
So I do think you could make a bow and arrow out of a cardboard tube and tinfoil.
And tinfoil.
If you are determined.
Yeah.
But you have to be really determined.
If you want it to be, physics will bow at your every whim.
Yeah, I mean, physics... Well,
do you think it's overrated, physics?
Yeah. I mean, you...
What's your favourite science?
My favourite science?
Yeah.
Well, that's a tough question.
I thought it was quite easy. What did you enjoy?
My favourite at school?
Social. Was it social science?
No, I didn't really like any of them. I think chemistry was probably my favourite of the ones I did at school.
Okay.
But, yeah, I don't know. My brother did geology. And that looked, I quite like that.
Yeah.
They're just studying stuff that happened millions of years ago. That's a science that really loves to ignore.
But nothing happened millions of years ago.
Well, it's just rocks knocking about with each other.
No, I mean, you know, the Earth is only, what, 6,000 years old?
Good point. Yeah. I mean, I was exaggerating for comic effect, obviously. Yeah.
I don't think the audience got it. I just have to clarify. But what you were doing was a joke. By the way, right? Okay, I've been to a lot of comedy recently in the last year or so.
Yeah.
Is it all just bashing people who believe in God? Is that all it is? Yeah. Is it every single comedian? It's just like, oh, I'm saying something about God. You lot are idiots if you believe in him. And I believe in God.
Yeah.
You know, I understand that some people find that ridiculous, but I think, you know, it's like a personal thing or whatever. I don't try spreading it to anyone or anything. And it is just like, wow. You know, I'm completely a believer in freedom of speech unless it leads to people getting killed and stuff. You know, and it doesn't, you know, doing that on stage. But it is like, you know, is it just a completely atheist art form now? Or has it become that? Has it become the mouthpiece for it?
I don't know. That's an interesting question. I don't know. I don't watch so much comedy now. So I tend to sit at home writing stuff about cricket instead. But, yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah, there isn't much in the way of, you know, sort of pro-religious comedy or, you know, theistic comedy.
Yeah.
When there are comedians who are religious, but I haven't seen many people talk about it on stage.
Yeah, I'm thinking of going on stage and just being like, atheists. What are they like, eh?
Yeah. What idiots. Gonna burn in hell.
Yeah.
yeah, so I guess, I mean, it would be quite hard I mean, it's always easier to, comedically, to destroy than create.
Yes.
Yeah. So, maybe that's one of the reasons why.
Yeah. Check this segue out.
Yeah.
Said it's easier to comedically destroy though than to create. You often comedically create, I've noticed a lot, like, you know, countless amount of euphemisms and synonyms for sexual organs, basically.
Yeah.
How do you have a list that you've created when you were about 12 years old that you use?
No, I tend to. You know, like any good fish shop, I tend to, you know, fry on demand. I make them up. I don't know. A lot of these things that I do came through doing the Bugle, doing the podcast.
Yeah.
So having a weekly space to fill.
Mm.
And the things you wouldn't necessarily do on stage, you just have much more scope for.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've done 220 episodes.
Yeah.
So we've probably done every form of comedy that you can do. But
yeah.
So, yeah, I guess started doing it with that. I mean, there's, you know, the euphemisms for genitals have been around ever since people started communicating, I guess. So,
But not, I mean, a few weeks ago it was something like Kiamaka's pamberisms or something.
I can't remember.
It's just weird, you know, it is very, very funny.
Well, I mean, a lot of it is, you know, it's just giving an, you know, it doesn't mean, it means nothing, but...
Yeah, but we get what you mean.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But, well, that was the way the Victorians used to do it.
Yeah.
Wasn't it? So, yeah.
Or they just didn't talk about it.
Yeah, the unmentionables.
Yeah. So, you said the word ridiculous. I'm trying segues out here, man, right. And it's not. I'm not good at segues, but
right.
You said ridiculous. Who is your most favourite or ridiculous person from historical person from when you studied classics? Or,
right. I don't know. But the most ridiculous.
Your favourite character, because there were some nutters around.
What, historical character?
Yeah, like is it Caligula or one of those?
Oh yeah, I mean he was a full on nut job and not afraid of an orgy by all accounts.
Mm.
one. Yeah, and they wrote, it must have been an odd time, ancient Rome. Well, you know, because if you were emperor, I think the reason why so many emperors were so crazy was because they knew they were going to get assassinated. Almost, I think probably over 100% of Roman emperors ended up being assassinated.
Okay.
At a conservative estimate.
Was that before, so was Caesar like in the middle of it? He wasn't like, he's just the most famous one to have been.
Well, he was sort of the first,
was that where
first
it started?
Of the emperors, yeah.
Oh, wow, okay.
If my limited and fading memory serves me right.
What did you get? Was it Oxford?
Yeah, I got a 2-1.
Okay, that's all right. Yeah. That's good.
I was not a particularly stellar student. Yeah, but I guess you knew. If you know you're going to be assassinated, you're going to think, oh, I'm going to have a f***ing laugh.
Yeah.
Before that happens. So, and Caligula took that arguably too far.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was.
Was he as crazy as Peter the Great? He used to keep lots of like
dwarfs
around him. Yeah, and he used to get exotic people to be around him. Like one Eritrean, actually, the most famous general in Russian history, Hannibal, was Eritrean, and his grandson was then Alexander Pushkin.
Oh right,
yeah. So
that's a good fact. I didn't know that.
Yeah, Pushkin's from my side.
Really?
Yeah. But yeah, he would do weird things. And just, you know, let's invade there for no reason. There's no one there. What are you on about?
And I heard he used to make dwarves marry each other.
Yeah,
From his collection of dwarves.
Yeah,
and also would have wedding cakes with another dwarf inside jumping out, saying, "Ah, look."
Yeah, this is strange. I mean, strange people.
But I would like the British royal family to return to that. I think our royal family now...
To return to that?
They're all related, aren't they? Because it's too boring now. It's too media managed. They should do crazy stuff like that.
Mm.
You know, look. The Queen's, 86? Mm. She hasn't got that long left.
Yeah.
You know, probably maximum another 50 years. Mm. If God keeps saving her. And one assumes he will, as long as we keep singing the song.
Yeah.
I think she should let her hair down now and get a bit crazy, get a bit medieval on the institution of monarchy.
Start using Catholics as a
fuel.
It's
old British tradition, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would solve a lot of things.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Do they let off that much, CO2 or carbon emissions?
Well, I imagine they're quite environmentally friendly.
Yeah, they are. They're the colour green, so they must be green, you know, in terms of...
Yeah. Well, that's how the environment works now, isn't it? You see petrol companies
if you just change
their logo to green and everything's, oh, that must be fine then.
Yeah, that must be the best one.
If I use their petrol, I'm basically breeding rare animals.
Yeah.
That's basically how it works psychologically. That's the magic of marketing.
Yeah, because I think that's what the Conservatives try to do when they put out that stupid squiggly new logo of theirs.
Yeah.
Who decided to let their child? Because surely I reckon some advertising company would have been paid like, you know, $100,000 for that logo. And just when I did art for GCSE, it was just I would do, you know, draw just the crappiest of things, and just but I would write 40 pages of bullshit about you know why what it means philosophically, you know, and just blah blah blah. And that's what must have happened. They must have been, you know, really... They must have believed what all the crap that came with it.
Yeah.
And decided, it's a great logo. This makes us look green.
Yeah.
We look environmental. A tree. We love trees in this country.
It's all about branding, isn't it?
Mm.
Jesus knew that. When he was throwing his shapes on the cross.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a very successful logo.
He was thinking
logo.
To himself, my hands and feet hurt, but this is a strong look.
Yeah, it is... Very good logo. It's very recognisable.
Yeah.
What do you reckon is more recognisable? The McDonald's arch, the Nike swoosh,
or the cross?
Or the cross.
Oof. Well, I mean, the cross has really stood the test of time.
Mm.
Whether McDonald's golden arches will still be here in 2,000 years.
Yeah, they open up more branches than Christianity does.
I mean, that is true. They haven't been involved in quite as many scandals of late.
They're catching up. They're trying to.
The Nike swoosh. I don't know. The church could have had that if Jesus had been killed by being put in a toboggan and sent down a slope off a cliff.
Yeah.
That could have been That could have been the girl.
Do you reckon he would have been into bobsledding if he was in like an icy country?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
He loved it quite good, didn't he? He loved transport.
Yeah, he did like that donkey.
He had a terrific donkey.
Mm.
So you'd have thought if he lived up a mountain, he'd have wanted a quick way down. And there's no quicker way down a mountain than a bobsled.
Yeah.
Provided there is a bobsled run down that mountain.
Yeah. And a bobsled.
And a bobsled to go on it, yeah.
Yeah. Or he could have just...
I think it'd have been a...
He could have put turned the donkey upside down, sat in the middle of its two... it's two rows of two.
Yeah.
Sat in the middle of it, used the front two, legs as steering wheels, right? And he could have... Bam, he could have had a bobsled.
Yeah.
Why did he not think of that?
Well, I might have. I mean, we only have edited highlights of his career.
Yeah.
But, I think... I think he'd have been excellent. He'd have been excellent at... and he could have, in a four-man bob, you'd have expected him to be at the front telling a parable and everyone behind him, like three gospel writers.
All right. So,
jotting it down.
So you and Jesus
have
a bobsled.
Yeah.
Who are the other two on your team?
Who are the other two?
Yeah, from historical figures. Usually it's like on a podcast or an interview, it's like, who would you invite to dinner? But on mine, it's...
Four-man donkey bobsled.
With you
and... I was in a band called Four-Man Donkey Bobsled once.
Were they good?
Awesome. Yeah. Sensational.
So, yeah,
it's kind
the other person...
Bluegrass hip-hop.
Okay.
So, the other two people in the Four-Man Donkey Bobsled...
Yeah.
I don't know. I quite like Joan of Arc.
Okay.
Just because I'm really curious to know what it's like to be burnt at the stake.
Yeah, she would keep the weight down as well. You and Jesus were heavy.
But you need someone with a bit of pace as well, a bit of power.
Mm.
So, that's I don't know. Alexander the Great, maybe.
Mm. Of course, around my part, we don't call him. We call him Shaitan.
Right.
In the West, you call him the Great.
The Great.
Yeah. I think.
What does Shaitan mean?
Satan.
Oh, Satan. Right.
Yeah. Same as in Hebrew.
Oh, right. It's very similar. I'm a bit out of the loop with that.
Yeah.
That's media spin on both sides, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
He was probably just a regular guy doing his job.
I don't know if you would have.
It was ages ago.
I know it was ages ago. It's just that the fact that they call him the Great, and I don't know. It's weird because it is weird that in some countries you call him the Great, in some countries we know him for murder and rape, and it's strange.
Yeah, well,
that, my problem is I don't let history go.
Right.
I still have.
I think that's not just your problem. That's the problem of the entire human race.
Yeah, but I take it personally.
John and I did a sketch in one of our radio shows, and we said that all the world's problems could be solved if history was banned. Basically, no one was allowed to mention anything that happened more than 6 weeks ago.
Wow.
Then
I'm thinking
just
about
all
that.
The world's problems would be solved at a stroke.
That's quite good an idea. Yeah. That's quite brilliant, actually. That's really good.
Just don't let anyone know what happened.
Yeah.
Then you can't get across about it. Yeah, I couldn't...
No, but then you'd get people going, why am I poorer than them? Do you know what I mean? Why is my country, basically we've just got one building.
Yeah.
And that's like a McDonald's.
That's just how it is. Yeah.
And people would just believe that.
Well, I mean, if they...
I don't think you thought it through. Who thought of the idea first? Was it you or John? Because I've got a real issue with that idea. At first, it was quite brilliant. I was thinking, wow, that's brilliant. But then, I think if you start equally and then don't let anyone...
That's changing the goalpost, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
So... But I want to hope Michael Gove, in his efforts to legislate education back to the 18th century, will consider that as something... Something to be included.
Yeah.
Because it was certainly, it was almost done.
I think that's what he's doing anyway. Yeah. He's literally taking everything other than this country's history out, and just, it's all about England.
Yeah. Well, that's someone who saw that with Cameron's speech about the EU this week, saying that, he was saying Britain has always been an outward looking country, and we have always been an outward-looking country, and we've been looking out saying, yeah, we'll have that, we'll have that, we'll have him, we'll take that back and open a museum, and we'll steal all your natural resources.
Yeah.
That, you need to be outward-looking.
And his gaff as well. Did you hear his gaff?
Which
when he said, I believe this is the right thing for us.
All.
Oh, crap, for us all. For us all, sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, did they hear that?
That's... I mean, when I was this old, I went to a private school in Kent, and history there was basically mostly about battles that Britain had won around the world.
Yeah. Does that include battles that Britain had lost, but they just rephrased them to seem like a points victory?
Yeah, basically. Yeah. So, I'm not sure that... I mean, that's basically halfway to... not letting anyone know any history, it's only letting them know one side of history.
Yeah.
And you take that one side out, you've got a blank canvas, everyone's happy.
Yeah. So what are your favourite battles?
My favourite battles?
Yeah.
Well, I've got a big soft spot for Waterloo, largely because of the film of it that was made about 40 years ago. Yeah. It used to be on telly when I was a kid. It seemed to be on most afternoons.
Okay.
That you'd put the telly on, there'd be an hour-long battle scene with Napoleon in it.
Mm.
That was a terrific battle.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I went the Battle of Bosworth, where Richard III was killed in 1485.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, that was Britain v Britain, win-win.
Mm.
When I was a kid, we went to the battlefield. Yeah. It was a day out. Oh, a sensational day out.
Is it just...
It's just
like a car park now.
It's just a field, yeah. But
my friend would love this, by the way. My best friend is a medieval... He's got a doctorate in medieval history, so he would be able to, you know...
But I was reading in the paper a few months ago that they reckon that the site where they thought that battle happened, they got it wrong. So it's a whole part of my childhood built on a lie.
Yeah, but a lot of also, like, I'm guessing people making careers out of being guides. You know, this is where Richard III slayed Patrick the Elderly. Or, you know.
Well, I mean, that must be a great... I've always quite wanted to be to be a tour guide and just...
I would never like, that would be quite funny.
Yeah.
But if it was for something actual serious, I would never employ you for that. It would just be... It would be very funny. Actually, you should...
There must be a market for
you know what?
Lying history tours.
We've got a BBC... A BBC Two series, I think, from this idea. I can executive produce it.
Yeah, why not?
And I can help with the writing if you want.
Yeah.
But it can just be called Andy Zaltzman's Journey Through History or Andy Zaltzman's History Tour Guide.
Yeah.
And you could just go, you know, each episode it could just be a major city of the world, which also means that we could travel around the world for free.
Yeah.
And you just tell lies.
Worked for Simon Sharma, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Same with David Attenborough and all those pretend animals.
Yeah.
Just a lot of people in
lion
pantomime gorilla suits and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, he's never... He doesn't know the first thing about wildlife. He just makes it up. He makes up the names of all these creatures.
Mm. Yeah, he does.
Someone with little plasticine models of locusts stuff, and there's David Attenborough saying this is...
I'm guessing they're brothers, right? David and Richard.
Yeah.
One of them's a director.
Yeah, he was an actor.
Yeah. It's...
What is
nepotism
that?
It's finest, you know.
Yeah.
Two most famous, you know, people in the country in terms of art.
Can't be coincidence.
Yeah. But what do you think of this idea? We should pitch
like it.
I think with your Jewishness, with my blackness and the fact that, you know, they need to tick the boxes.
Yeah.
We could get, you know.
Yeah.
Have you pitched shows in the past?
I've had radio shows and they've mostly been cancelled.
But have you got a confirmed Andy Zaltzman's history of the third millennium, season two? Have they agreed to do that in seven years?
No, well, I hope they will. I mean, that was probably bad career planning. I've done a lot of bad career planning in my time. But doing a review of the decade that can only be done once a decade, that was probably not the best way to get a recurring... recurring commission.
But you could just do what Armando does, which I'm on first name, never met him, but I'm on first name terms of him. You could just do what he does and just do it now, you know, if you time trump it.
Oh, yeah.
He did a history of the world from 2006 to 2005. He made it in 2005, in fact, no, 2006 to 2012. Made it in 2005, but set it in 2033, which is a genius idea.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you could just do what you want.
He's full of good ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've been on his radio show, right?
Yeah, I've worked with him briefly on a couple of things.
Yeah. Is he like the godfather of satire, or like a lot of people in British comedy seem to have come from his stable?
Yeah. Yeah, not so much of satire itself, because I think, you know, the type of satire he does is of a certain type, but certainly comedically, he's one of the most influential figures in British comedy, certainly.
Yeah.
He's done a lot of good stuff.
Do you get a feeling that, you know, if you're really good friends with him, he'll executive produce your show, get it on television? Not you specifically, but
I'd imagine he's got enough stuff of his own to be doing rather than facilitating other stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, but you're Stuart Lee's show. I think that's what everyone's saying. Yeah, but you're doing Stuart Lee's show. Why can't you help me out? You know?
Yeah.
Are you a fan of, mainly, you know? I'm going to ask you like the generic question now.
Well, yeah, I really like Stuart Lee's. When I was sort of new on the circuit, he was one of the people I liked most. Robert Newman as well.
Mm. Oh, yeah, his History of Oil was really...
Yeah.
Really good.
I really like Mark Steele, Daniel Kitson. He's a good friend of mine.
Mm.
His stuff's very good. I don't think I'm going out on a limb when I say any of these names.
Yeah, so, yeah. No, but I think Daniel doesn't like there to be any evidence that he's ever been a performer or anyone that's not... It's hard for me to explain Daniel Kitson to people.
Yeah.
Or show him, usually, it's, oh, he's good, let me show you on YouTube. There's nothing.
Yeah.
There is nothing. There's nothing for sale. There's nothing for...
Yeah, well, he's... You know, I think, you know, he's protective of his live stuff. And it's very difficult to make stuff that works live work in another context. So,
yeah.
You know, he's understandably protective of it, I guess.
Yeah, because I watched his... I think it was at the National Theatre or something. We watched one of his plays or one-man shows. Yeah. It wasn't like a comedy one-man. It was like a play, one-man play. And it was... amazing. Like, it really, like, you know, it wasn't that funny, but it was just like in your soul, you just, this is like, wow, like the cat, you know, it resonated.
Yeah.
And I just felt, you know, if we were to film this, you would have to do a movie of 10, you know, with all the characters being played, because it's showing. I've never seen a one man play on DVD. I don't know how it would work.
Well, it,
maybe that's one of the reasons why he doesn't release stuff. Or
It's a very different relationship you have with, you know, the thing that you're watching, if you're watching it on a screen, than if you're watching it in person.
Mm.
So, it's the great thing about him is he can do that, and he can also be unfeasibly crude.
Yeah.
He's got a range of clubs in his bag.
Mm. So, do we have... How much time do we have? Let me just check. I want to make sure you're not late.
Actually, I ought to go pretty soon.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
So, what, 5 minutes?
Yeah.
All right. So, I'll just run through a few quick things.
Yeah.
I was going to say Edinburgh, but that's not really a quick thing. But how's your relationship with Edinburgh now compared to when you first got into comedy?
Well, I've always really liked it, and... I've just enjoyed it from a creative and comedic point of view, and tried to ignore the kind of trade fair aspect of it. And I've done that quite successfully, to the extent that trade has not come to me from it. So, but I've always really enjoyed doing it. And it's kind of the thing in live comedy that I've generally enjoyed best.
Yeah,
but I found the first year I went out, I did the Comedy Zone, which is a package show, when I was only been going about a year and a half. And We were reviewed by The Observer on the first night, and The Observer described me as grindingly mediocre.
Yeah.
So from that, that was a low point to start.
Yeah.
So everything since then has seemed more enjoyable than that.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's good to start from a base point of total humiliation.
Yeah.
And then everything seems an upward curve.
But at first you were trying, like, you weren't actively trying, but you were thinking this could get picked up. Was that where you were?
Well, you sort of think that to an extent, but then really the first few years I was just trying to, I guess, learn the craft and get better and develop new routines and new ideas. And I don't know, I've never really thought of it as a, particularly as a way of getting discovered.
Mm.
But, well, that's part of it. But I think if you think of it from those terms, then you...
You end up disappointed.
Well, you can end up disappointed. It might work for you, might not, I don't know.
Yeah. And the other quick thing, as we end, is have you listened to a lot of rap music and what do you think of it? Because I noticed that you signed off your text with AZ.
Oh, right.
Are you aware that AZ is a rapper?
No, he's, I'm not. No,
from Queensbridge. He's a good friend of Nas. Do you know Nas? Have you heard of Nas?
I've heard the name. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you don't know who AZ is? He's actually really good.
I'll take your word for that. Yeah, okay. I don't. I'm not. I don't listen to a lot of rap.
Yeah.
I like Sir Mix a lot.
Okay. Yes. and you like? I wouldn't call them rappers, but you obviously are a huge fan of LMFAO.
Big fan.
Or is that mainly John?
John's really into it.
Yeah, he loves it.
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't?
Yeah.
Who doesn't in this day and age?
Yeah.
Bashir al-Assad likes it. We all like it.
Yeah.
That's the way it goes. But I quite like it when I hear it, but...
Do you?
Yeah. But, no, I prefer most of the music I listen to was made by people who died before I was born, so...
Yeah. Oh, you're mainly into classical
no,
stuff?
No, just old blues and...
Okay.
And, yeah. Muddy Waters, and he died after I was born. But
yeah.
He's probably my favourite.
A few.
That's
years.
Not really cutting edge, is it?
No, it's not.
I mean,
about a year ago, I just got into Arthur Brown.
Right.
Should have been love his first album, The Crazy World of Arthur Brown. Have you listened to the album?
I haven't listened to the album, but I did a gig at the Guildford Festival years ago, and he was already quite an old, this must have been 7 or 8 years ago, he was a pretty old man.
Yeah,
and,
he's pretty old now. He's...
He was doing a set on the music stage and I was in the comedy centre and I saw a little bit of it and he kind of dived out into the audience and was doing his stick
he's
in the
amazing.
Audience. And then you just hear this voice of the microphone saying, could someone please give the God of Hellfire a lift back up onto the stage? It was magnificent.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
All right,
he was
cool.
A great man. All right. British legend.
Yeah. No, he's amazing.
Yeah.
But I think we have to end. So
yes.
Thank you. I'll recommend you some rap, by the way.
But, oh, thanks very much.
Some intelligent stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Mainly mine, but yeah.
Right.
All right, yeah. Thank you very much, Andy Osman.
Cheers.
All right. No introduction is required. You are now entering the land of the inspired. My name's Awate and I'm known in certain homes around the globe. Spit poems that make you pick up the phone and dial 93 times. Shine like street sands. One of my favourite hobbies is to find and beat swine. I can't help it. They kill too many people of my colour and my class for me to sit and be quiet. So why do we riot? Well, how about the government are just a bunch of liars? Cut funding for fun and wonder why there's street violence. A joke, so I give you something to quote so you can shove it down their throats. But I digress and I confess to being one of the best, so I stick out my chest and take your shots without a vest. Never suppress my thoughts. You can try to arrest me for inciting violence, but I just describe what I see behind my eyelids. And what I hear are rappers who are fakers, say they get the bread but they've never been to the bakers. Now tell me, how is that tolerated? Modern day society is severely discombobulated. So if you ever want to use a music studio, I mean, do you play anything?
I play very basic guitar.
Yeah.
But, just for my kids, really.
Okay, cool.
Not kind of publishing stuff.
Are you not thinking of doing that on stage?
No.
Using those skills?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, cool.
They're pretty minimal.